Chapter 6. Time is Money. The Austrian Theory of Capital and Interest. The up-and-coming Austrian school received support from abroad even during the Methodenstreit. Leon Walras mentioned already well-known supporters of the new value theory from among the Romance countries in the preface to his Théorie de la Monnaie, 1886. In English publications, the subjectivist theory of value was gaining increased acceptance as well. The fact alone that it had been discovered at almost the same time by three authors, Walras, Menger, and Jevons, was considered by Böhm-Bawerk to be substantive evidence of its veracity. In contrast, Gustav Kohn, 1840-1919, an advocate of the historical school, interpreted this brisk publishing activity to mean that the discovery of the marginal utility constituted a meagre morsel that would have to be shared by a number of like-minded discoverers. Yet within months, the derisive phrase meagre morsel was impressively refuted. In 1889 alone, members of the Austrian school published a notable number of monographs, offering productive suggestions for further development. Böhm-Bawerk, Positive Theorie des Kapitals, Positive Theory of Capital. Zuckerkandel, Zur Theorie des Preises, on the Theory of Price. Wiese, Der natürliche Wert, Natural Value. Schulen zu Schattenhofen, Untersuchungen über Begriff und Wesen der Grundrente. Analyses of the Concept and the Essence of the Ground Rent. Sachs, Neueste Fortschritte in der nationalökonomischen Theorie. Recent Advancements in the Theory of Economics. And Komorzynski, Der Wert in der isolierten Wirtschaft, The Value in the Isolated Economy. Böhm-Bawerk achieved the most lasting impact by far. With his positive theory, he not only laid the foundations for an Austrian theory of capital and interest, but made a critical contribution to the international reputation of the Austrian school. He became one of the most discussed and quoted economists of his time. During a seminar led by Carl Gustav Adolf Knies, 1821-1898, at the University of Heidelberg, Böhm-Bawerk, as a scholarship recipient, had already thoroughly considered the relationship between the present and the future by posing the question, why is a debtor prepared to pay the creditor interest for a loan on top of paying back the amount of the loan itself? He answered this by explaining that future goods have a lower value than present goods, and the result is a difference in value between the present and the future, between loan and repayment. Payment and return are deemed equivalent when the difference in value has been balanced by a quantitative plus, namely interest. Without specifying further, he argued that a self-induced creation of capital value would make repayment of such amounts economically feasible for a debtor. The publication of Positive Theory was preceded by a wide-ranging, virtually complete collection and appraisal of all the established theories of capital and interest. Böhm-Bawerk dealt with more than 150 authors and laid out an exemplary history of dogma, whose structure suggests that he had already put together a complete draft of positive theory. Die Geschichte und Kritik der Kapitalzinstheorien, History and Critique of Theories of Interest, 1884, would give the further development of the Austrian school direction in two ways in particular. First, Böhm-Bawerk subjected the socialist labor theories of value by Johann Karl Rodbertus, 1805-1875, and Karl Marx, 1818-1883, to a detailed and consistently deprecatory criticism, thus laying the foundation for the critique of Marxism in the Austrian school's tradition. Second, he dismissed Karl Menger's utility theory, according to which capital rent is the remuneration for the hired use of capital. Böhm-Bawerk's objection was that Menger considered a good and the disposal over goods to be two separate value repositories and would lead to an incorrect double count. This was simply the logical outcome of his definition of the term good, which differed from Menger's and which Böhm-Bawerk had already presented in his revised post-doctoral thesis. This divergence and its consequences resulted in the founder of the Austrian schools taking a detached view of its definitive theory of capital and interest throughout his life. In his positive theory, the publication of which was held up for years, Bohm Bawerk defined capital as a group of products destined to serve to its further production, or as a group of intermediate products. Based on this notion of capital, three kinds of capital yield were conceivable: revenue from a loan, revenue from renting out a durable good, or revenue from a production process. All three types of revenue could ultimately be explained by the subjectivist value theory. The starting point had been the observation that, in general, present goods were valued more highly than future goods of equal kind and number. Two reasons can be cited. First, the ratio between demand and supply varies at different points in time, because personal circumstances and future expectations are constantly changing. Second, we systematically underrate our future needs, as well as the means to meet them. The causes of this misjudgment are our hazy picture of the future, our weakness of will, and our consideration of the brevity and incertitude of life. Bohm Bawerk concluded from all this that we look at the marginal utility of future goods diminished, as it were, in perspective, and that thus the agio on present goods moves upwards. There is a third reason for the upward pressure on this agio premium, however, which does not reside in the sphere of the consumer, but in that of the producer. According to Bohm Bawerk, it is in the nature of capitalist production that the elementary economic productive forces, labor and land use, possibly also in combination with natural forces, are combined in such a way that consumer goods are created either directly or indirectly. As a general rule, such indirect production would also lead to a greater result in output. Thus, one could use nothing but one's hands to break stones out of a rock face, or one could first extract iron, then use it to make hammer and chisel, and then get to work. An even greater and more time-consuming form of indirect production would be to take sulfur and sodium nitrate to manufacture gunpowder, fill it into drilled holes, and thus blast out the rocks. An operation like this would increase the result in output many times over. However, this rule would only apply for a wisely chosen capitalist process. With increasing diversity in production, the additional revenue would then decrease again after a certain point. Bohm Bawerk borrowed the concept of productive diversion and its additional revenue from a number of predecessors whose ideas he developed and formulated more stringently. Later it would turn out that John Ray, 1796-1872, a Scotsman who had emigrated to Canada and fallen into oblivion, had already preempted the positive theory on key points in 1834. Interest, according to Bohm Bawerk, thus had psychological and productive technical causes. It also exists independently of the prevailing economic and social system. A difference in value would exist between present and future goods, even in a socialist state. The interest principle can therefore in no way be conceived as exploitation, because it is not a historico-legal category, but an economic category which springs from elementary economic causes. Bohm Bawerk, who considered the basic principles of his theory of capital and interest to be unusually simple and natural, had to supplement and expand his work considerably in order to combine the subjectivist value theory with his capital theory. He thus made a clear distinction between the reasons for the origin of interest and those which were responsible for the specific interest rate. Furthermore, as he had combined heterogeneous intermediate products and their variously long indirect production paths under the term capital, he had to introduce the term average period. This was illustrated with a simple diagram of figures. Moreover, he adopted Stanley Jevons's concept of wage funds because the laborers involved in indirect production paths had to be supported for the duration of the production process. Finally, the subjectivist value theory had to be reconciled with the law of costs, which states that in the long term the market price of reproducible goods will equal the production costs. These and other additions meant that the basically elegant theoretical structure appeared more and more contrived and overburdened. Nevertheless, Bohm Bawerk's positive theory had an enormous impact internationally. It was translated into English as early as 1891, and into French soon afterward. In 1892, Swedish economist Knut Wicksell 1851-1926, saw to its mathematical reformulation. By the turn of the century, Boehm Bawerk was counted among the world's most famous and talked-about economists. A second edition was published in 1900, and it contained a heftily expanded criticism of Marx. A third was published in 1913. Both editions included excursuses in which responses were given to objections that had been raised. Finally, Friedrich von Wiese arranged for a fourth publication in 1921, a complete edition in three volumes that was to be published under the title Kapital und Kapitalzins, Capital and Interest. Menger, whose notion of capital fundamentally differed from Boehm Bawerk's, took up an extremely critical stance. In small circles, he even went so far as to call Boehm Bawerk's theory one of the greatest errors ever committed. There has been much speculation as to what might have led to Menger's stern rejection. It could hardly have been Boehm Bawerk's insufficiently consistent subjectivism, as even Menger's definitions of value theory contain some residual objectivism. A distinctive dividing line, however, were their differing methodological approaches. Menger took Boehm Bawerk to task for the obvious artificiality of some of his theories. Boehm Bawerk did indeed demonstrate an almost unconcerned, pragmatic, eclectic attitude when it came to methodological questions. Characteristic of this attitude was his rejection of the use of mathematics in economics. This was not for fundamental epistemological reasons, as was the case with Menger, but because he, along with most of his faculty colleagues, utterly lacked the necessary mathematical skills. Furthermore, positive theory seems in some respects to point in the direction of modern macroeconomics. Unlike other key works of the Austrians, it contains an unmistakable tendency to create highly abstract aggregates and demonstrates a hearty propensity to quantify, albeit in the modest guise of simple forms of calculation. Boehm Bawerk's theory was also met with reservation or even rejection by the successive generations of the Austrian school. The 28-year-old Joseph R. Schumpeter, 1883-1953, developed his own dynamic theory of interest, which must have appeared to Boehm Bawerk as a defamation of middle-class economic morality and a heralding of inflationist daredevil policies. Boehm Bawerk rejected it with rare forcefulness. Schumpeter's response was accordingly subdued. In the context of Boehm Bawerk's seminars, Ludwig von Mises, 1881-1973, also made the criticism that his theory of capital and interest had proceeded on the assumption of a neutrality of money. According to Mises, Boehm Bawerk moved far beyond his published theories by the end of his life. It was finally Emil Sachs who, in Der Kapitalzins, 1916, Interest on Capital, presented the first comprehensive critique of Boehm Bawerk and compiled all of the arguments that future authors would raise against him. Boehm Bawerk's theory of capital and interest was a chain of thought too elaborately spun out and, owing to its unevenness, unable to withstand a tensile test. Above all, Sachs believed he could prove that each of the three reasons for a value difference between present and future goods was questionable. The durable goods, fixed capital, as such, could not yield any interest. That the term average roundabout production process, durchschnittlicher Produktionsumweg, was too indeterminate, and that the positive theory did not account for compound interest. Thus, Der Kapitalzins documented just another step in the drifting apart of the Austrian school at the height of its international eminence. External events, such as Menger's permanent withdrawal from university activity, Boehm Bawerk's death in 1914, and the outbreak of the war, however, scarcely allowed this internal split to come to the surface. In the last analysis, no economist of note agreed with Boehm Bawerk on every point, but for decades his work continued to have an unusually inspiring and fruitful impact. Among the representatives of the Austrian school, Boehm Bawerk was always revered as one of the greats. The generation of academics who came after the First World War felt compelled to qualify his work and make manifold changes or other shifts in emphasis. But this did little or no harm to the remarkable fascination with which Boehm Bawerk's theory of capital and interest is treated to this very day. This undiminished appeal might be due to the fact that Boehm Bawerk's monumental theory reveals a glimpse of the hidden logic or the grammar of economic phenomena.